listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 273 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. You alright, Sean?
I'm good.
How you doing? You okay?
I'm good, just back from the holiday.
That's some good news.
In sunny Italy.
It's good to have you back.
Very, very good. Yeah, Lake Como.
Got some nice colour in your skin.
Recommend it to everybody. Amazing.
We'll join you on one of those trips one of these years, man.
Yeah, pasta and vino. It's the drive down. It's amazing. And the drive back. People go, how on earth could you drive that far? But it's like, it's the views and going through the mountains. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, this whole other world presents itself.
And you can go anywhere you want. You can visit places. You know, it's great.
Yeah, cool. We're talking about bad news today, aren't we? Delivering it, receiving it, and the ins and outs of that topic. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website, all the show notes and links. Sean's written a blog post to go with this. If you stick your email address in the box, what do people get, Sean?
They get prizes.
Prizes, yeah, that's it. Actually, yeah, free meditation files, which might help set you up for the inevitable bad news that will hit at some point. Don't want to be too much of a down straight away. Discount code for the book. That'll help you.
That's
like
good news.
You wouldn't believe it. That's good news as well. Yeah. That's not bad news at all. should we just crack on with this week's show?
Yeah.
I haven't been doing anything exciting. Nothing going on in my life.
Same old,
dreary drab. Ride to work, do some work, go home. Put the kids to bed.
This sounding like bad news.
No, I'm kidding. I'm loving it. This was your idea, this one, this show.
Well,
why?
Again, I'm involved in a closure program. It's not a closure program, it's a redundancy program. And throughout my working life, I've done so many closure things, downsizing things, closing factories, hospitals. They have been connected with startups like the care and community stuff. I've gone into workforces and had to halve the workforce.
So you had some nicknames, didn't you, I believe?
Yeah. When I was in Wales, one of my nicknames was Sean Closure. So if I went on a ward in any of the five hospitals I was involved in closing, people said, oh, no, we're closing! Because they panic, you know. and that whole idea about if you have got to give people bad news, how do you do it? You know, what do you do with it? And who is affected by the bad news? Because bad news in my world comes in a variety of things. I'm involved in this downsizing program at the moment where people will be made redundant. But what happens if you're given the news that you've got a terminal illness? What happens if your partner comes along and says, I want to divorce you? All these things are bad news, aren't they? And it's like there are two sides to any bit of bad news. It's how do you give that bad news? But the second bit is how do you receive it?
There's two sides to it, isn't it? So we'll talk about the kind of delivery side first. You got tips and tricks on delivering? You don't get to deliver like medical news, I assume, to people?
No, but I'm usually associated with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a doctor may kind of prescribe you beforehand.
Yeah, if there was a consultant who was doing something, they might say to me, you know, I've got to tell this person this. You know, we need some...
So you work with consultants and doctors, healthcare folks, on how they can deliver?
Yeah. I used to do the... Part of my the training work I did was training GPs in their bedside manner.
So what are the top tips you...
The main thing is you have to be precise, you have to be clear, and you have to be honest.
Yeah.
There are so many doctors that I've worked with over the years who have a real problem saying to somebody, look, you're going to die. You know, you have a terminal illness, you're going to die. Because they have to come up with all kinds of things like, well, the news isn't too good and it's not looking very... And they start to give the person that feeling that, well, maybe it's going to be okay. And I've had to work then with patients who are terribly terminal, who have been given the impression by the doctor that they might survive because the doctor couldn't face giving the news.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And which sounds crazy, especially when you're in the whole kind of end of life areas. But there are doctors out there that are like that.
Well, yeah, and you can sort of appreciate why, which is not an easy thing to do. But I mean, obviously, you would hope that a doctor or a consultant over time would get better at that kind of thing.
There's a bit of research. I've mentioned it before on a podcast back along, but I'll say it again. On death row, if you take the bloods of the people on death row in the States, because they might be on death row for many years as they go through different appeals and stuff like that, the level of stress hormone in their system and the anxiety is very, very high. You know, week on week, they don't know what's going to happen. As soon as you give them the news that they're going to die, you know, next Wednesday, and they know, the level of stress comes right down.
All right. Okay.
And it's because the worst thing ever is uncertainty. Yeah, even the worst news ever, people tend to be able to deal with that more than if it's unknown.
Yeah.
Even if their response is to jump up and down, scream, shout, punch things, whatever it is, they start to process. Whereas when you can't process because you don't know, it's very, very painful.
Mm.
And it's ongoing pain.
Yeah, I mean, I had a very minor, in the grand scheme of things, health issue recently with the skin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the C word, the skin cancer that was found on my chest.
Yeah.
So I had that initial conversation, well, the first like, couple of months when I saw this thing, I was like, well, that's not going away, yada yada, I need to go see a doctor. My dad's had loads of these removed, so I was kind of semi-expecting it. And so I had the initial thing with the doctor, the what the skin guy's called?
Dermatologist. Yeah.
Where he had a good old look at it. And he had the to deliver the news, which wasn't particularly bad because he'd had three of them that the morning already that he'd had to diagnose. But he, at some point he had to use the C word because it's a basal cell carcinoma, a superficial basal cell carcinoma.
A BCC.
Yeah. So he kind of said that first, and then he said it's a non-life-threatening skin cancer, which as soon as he said the C word, I'm like, it's like, wow, flipping heck.
Yeah.
That's a bit freaky. But he was good, and he was quickly to say, oh, it's quite easy to treat. There's a few ways we can do it. We can, you know, lob it off. We need to do a biopsy, yada, yada, yada. You're quite young, blah, but we have one of these things. So that was quite interesting. But, I felt my anxiety was firing off a little bit. And then I had to make the call to Bethan, who knew I was going to see this, my wife, to see the dermatologist, so she wanted to know straight away what it was, and I had to deliver that news to her without freaking her out initially, saying it's skin cancer, oh my god, but at some point I had to say that, and she started to panic and like, no, it's fine, it's the same with my dad, had he's had loads of them off, just needs to be a bit more careful, blah blah blah. But so that was my recent experience with bad news. The dermatologist was pretty good, he kind of knew what he was doing in terms of delivering semi bad-ish news. And I think I did an all right job.
So do you think that the message that you got was a good one? Was it delivered well?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty well. Maybe tweak... When he used the word non-life-threatening, I probably wouldn't have gone with that, because you immediately kind of think, but it's going to hurt, or it's going to be...
So what phrase would you have used rather than non-life-threatening?
Oh, blimey, what would I have done in my flippant ways, flipping heck, I don't know, to be honest. I probably just would have said, look, yeah, okay, it's a BCC, it's a really easy to treat, but maybe that would have given me, to be honest, I haven't been back for the checkup to say that it's...
But if he had said to you, it's a basal cell carcinoma, that would have said, you've got cancer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sort of. It would have.
So is carcinoma more acceptable than the word cancer?
Probably, yeah. Is that why it's called a BCC instead of skin cancer?
It's just because it's a basal cell carcinoma.
Yeah. He did a pretty good job. Yeah. Mm. I think. I guess he's got to cover his bases a little bit, because these things, if left untreated for a long time, a long, long time, can cause problems.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I guess it's tricky to deliver news like that without some kind of anxiety. And maybe, you know, maybe a level of anxiety on my part is needed so that I take more care in the future in terms of protection in the sun, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe people do need a bit of a kick up the backside every now and again, just to kind of wake them up.
One of the things about delivering bad news, whether it's health or whether it's the stuff I have to do sometimes in the workplace about people being let go, is the phrase, isn't it? Is that do we have an ending or do we have a beginning? Because to have a beginning, you have to have an ending. So the bit that's important to me is, where do we go from here? Where's it going? Yeah. Now, that's quite different to, you know, sorry, sunshine, but you're dying. You know, that's a different kind of message, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how we deliver that may vary depending on the person, depending on all kinds of things. If we know the person, like their religious beliefs and all kinds of stuff, there may be different ways that we need to say something. Or,
with sensitivity.
And one of the issues is, if someone's going to die, do you use words like death and dying? Do you use words like passing away or passing on?
Get your affairs in order.
Yeah, you know, it's what kinds of phrases do you use? And the thing is that there are things that are not good to say and there are things that are good to say, but so much of it is dependent on the person that you're talking to.
Yeah, so you need to change your
You can't just have a script that you're going to read off, you know, like someone who's doing a funeral service and they say the same thing at every funeral service.
Yeah, we're all different characters, aren't we? Yeah. And we all have different backgrounds in terms of... Well, let's say you're having to make 100 people redundant, or you're on behalf of the company you're working for. Every one of those redundancies has got a different situation in terms of life. Like it might be a single parent, it might be struggling to pay the bills, it might be going through all sorts. Do you have that information beforehand?
No, not necessarily.
Do you have to kind of wing it when you meet a person and get a sense for what they are like and how to deal with it?
Yeah, and again, it varies on the situation. You will have some information from the HR facility. If you have a big cohort of people that have to go, then obviously it's much more difficult to hone into individuals.
It's always done one-on-one. You're never in like a group of people, I assume.
No, it varies. It varies. It can be a big group of people. When the big Glaxo factory was closing, and I took on the role of seeing that through the closure program.
Yeah.
When they made the announcement, it was the classic Friday. They called everybody into the canteen Friday lunchtime, and they made the announcement that the unit was going to close. It was going to close in 3 years, and they were going to put a package in place. And what happened was the chief exec stood up and gave the announcement, and as soon as he said closure, everybody went into panic, and they didn't hear what he said after that. So I ended up, because I'd worked in the company a bit, and so the staff knew me, so I said, can I talk? So I got the microphone and I just said, okay, everybody shut up, listen to this. Yeah, this is closing, right? But this is the best offer that you guys are ever going to have. This is a 3-year closure program. You're not going today, and they're putting in all this support, all these resources and all this training. You know, this is a really, really good opportunity, and if we work together, we can create a new future for each of you.
And then everyone whooping and hollering. And
so, but it started to change then. Yeah. But the thing is that as soon as we say, you are going to close, it's going to, everybody goes into panic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean about, if we're just talking about endings, then there's an end. You know, there is a death of some sort.
Yep.
Yeah, whereas if it's something that's stopping to allow other things to begin, we need to focus on what the beginning is.
Yep.
Yeah.
3 years is an amazing buffer. Is that, in some ways, is 3 years too long? Do people need, less time to kind of energise themselves and have a good thing?
Well, what they did there, because, like I say, it was a really, really well-done programme, is they actually pay people a bonus to stay to the end, so people were motivated to stay to the end.
Wow, blimey. Yeah. They thought that through big time.
Yeah, they got people onto training programmes so that when they did finally finish working, they went on to do training to be able to do something else. They did all kinds of stuff. Really, really good.
Yep.
Couldn't give it enough praise. As opposed to, you know, take your sandwiches and bugger off, which is what a lot happens in a lot of cases.
Yep.
Yeah. So the issue for me in a workforce, these are the things that are important, is the person that's going is suffering bereavement, right? The people that are left is going to be the people that have survivor guilt, yeah? Which is just like a death. Everyone else is dying. Why not me?
Yep.
Yeah? Then there's going to be the people that have the, I'm going to have to really fight my corner to make sure I'm not in one that might go again. So people start bullying everybody else so they can start to look like they're really good and clever.
Yep.
And then there's an amount of people that think, well, I'm not staying here. I can go and sell my skills to someone and they're gone.
Mm.
So it's like when we look at something, whether it is news of a death or news of any kind of bereavement or loss or change, it isn't just the person who is affected by it. It is everybody else around them, their family, their colleagues, whatever it is around there. So a massive ripple effect from anything like that.
Wow.
And we tend not to focus on it.
Mm.
Yeah. And one of the things is that ripple effect goes on. So if you're working with somebody who has just lost someone, 3 months down the line, see, now I've just said lost someone, is that okay? Someone passed away, someone passed on, they died.
Yeah.
They lost someone. Sounds like they're going to find him again, doesn't it? But it's like, okay, someone's gone. 3 months down the line, everybody else has forgotten about it, but that person is still in the grip of grief.
If you're working with someone who is, you know, terminal, and they've got 3 months to live, etc., etc., do you get introduced to the extended family by that person? Because
it would depend.
Like the person that's dying saying, look, I'm going to go now. It's easy for me. I'm going to be dead, but I'm going to leave behind this person who I know will not be coping well. Can you please keep an eye on them for me? That kind of thing.
I think that everything is individual. Because I am predominantly an independent practitioner, I can do all kinds of things like that. Many of the services, especially the NHS, the people that do the psychotherapy, the support work, psychological medicine stuff, are not allowed to do that. Like there's many times people are not allowed to attend funerals.
Mm.
Yeah, very often if you've worked with an individual and maybe worked with the family, it's very appropriate for you to attend the funeral. You're a part of the ending.
Yeah.
But many services would say, no, you can't do that. You mustn't do that. So, which to me creates a bit of an oddity when you're working with people. But yes, I have got involved with all kinds of things in those kinds of situations, not just death situations, but also things where people have left organisations and I've continued to support them afterwards, maybe even like a year afterwards, they'll contact me and say, you know, I need a bit of help, you know, that kind of stuff, making sure that people are okay, because it is the ripple effect, it rolls on.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I want to talk briefly, well, not talk as long as you want about it, but in terms of bad news, a lot of these situations we've discussed, we've said that bad news has kind of come as a bit of a shock and a surprise to people. Should we not be telling our listeners out there now, and ourselves, that bad news is inevitable, and that at some point in the next, I don't know, it could be months, years, for me and you, for everyone listening, someone is going to phone you and deliver some bad news to you. So whether it be health related, whether it be a loss of a loved one, whether it be work related, maybe you're working in an industry that 10 years down the line you know for a fact is going to be struggling or non-existent. So if you have that knowledge in advance and that preparation, that you are you're going to be better prepared, aren't you, to deflect it or to move on quickly? Or maybe you can move on before the bad news even hits.
I would say something that a lot of people might be a bit put out by. And to me, it's the thing about if you live in a world of mindfulness and you develop a level of awareness, there is a point where nothing bad ever happens, because everything becomes a learning opportunity, it becomes a way of growing and developing. Now, the idea of people being born and people dying isn't an illness or an oddity, it's a natural process of life. It's us that cause it, things like bad news. Now, as a self-employed person, the majority of my life, then contracts have always started, they've always gone through their life and they've ended, because that's the nature, it's beginnings and endings. So for me, the idea of rolling from one set of work to another set of work is normal.
Mm.
People that are locked into being PAYE, and when they go through that process of change, it can be very scary because they're not used to doing it.
Yep.
Yeah. We're all going to die, and it's popular to say, hey, we're all going to die, and then everyone says, yeah, it's okay to say that, but we're all going to have to do it. But actually, we are all going to have to do it. And at the point where I assume someone is likely to say to me at some point, hey, Sean, you've got Wongo Bongo disease and you know, you're not going to be around much longer. It could be that I drop dead while I'm out on a run. I don't know. But the thing is that at that point, it's not the fact that I'm given the news that's important, it's what do I do with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that's also true for my nearest and dearest, that if I come home, like if you, you know, you come home and you say, actually, I've just been diagnosed with this, it's like what they do with it and how they deal with it is their stuff. And yes, there will be loss, there will be emotion, but it could be, and I've seen this happen a lot of times, is that someone does know that they're going and that they've got a limited amount of time. No one can actually tell you how long you've got. They may, you know, the doctor may be able to make an educated guess.
Yep.
But those few months could be actually cracking. They mm-hmm. could be really, really good. Could be amazing.
Full of joy, yeah.
Yeah, depending on how you deal with it. And I know it's dead easy to make it sound like it's all right for you. They're sat there because you're not going through it. And I know that when you go through stuff, it's difficult. I'm not stupid.
Well,
some people might say. Yeah, but the thing is, if at the outset we look at this about, okay, it's not bad things that are happening, it's things that are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah? If I end up with some kind of cancer and I have to face those kinds of issues, I can either face them with, oh, okay, let's go and see what this is like. Never had chemotherapy before. Let's go and try this, see what it's like.
Yeah, I it's a blast. Yeah.
Or I could be thinking, oh, my God, I've got chemo. You know, it's how am I going to approach it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole idea about if you're going to have surgery, if you're going to have something done or a limb removed, that's not the issue. It's how do we observe it? How do we deal with it? What are we going to do? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've got a friend who has gone through quite a massive loss recently. He may actually come on the show at some point, but no pressure or what have you. But I've been able to send a couple of emails back and forth with him to just see how he's doing and how he's getting on with things. And I'd know, in the knowledge that he's been training in terms of meditation and his religious practices, probably for just such events as this, as has befallen him. So, I've been sharing a couple of emails and messages, basically just really interested to know how he's getting on and whether or not his training is working and has worked. And it's been fascinating, actually, getting his responses, basically saying, yeah, okay, it's been tough. You know, I've been through the ringer. But I don't know, these are my words, but not to perhaps the extent that your average person would, having lost someone so close to them. He was better set up for this stuff, and in the knowledge that it's sad and it's terrible, but it's just a part of life, and that he's able to move on. Maybe not quicker, maybe he's able to appreciate what's happened more and look at it from all angles and just see it as something that is healthy and an amazing part of life, painful but incredible.
But also, anybody in any situation will go through the grief process.
Yeah.
The thing is that do you get washed away in the grief process, or are you able, with the kind of techniques that you're describing in this guide, able to observe your grief and be with your grief? Not to deny your grief or say, hey, I haven't got grief, but to actually observe it, acknowledge it, and allow that process to flow through you. Because grieving isn't an illness, it's a process. To be in grief, to be in bereavement, isn't to be ill. It's to be in grief and bereavement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a completely normal, natural place to be.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah, fascinating. And, you know, in terms of the business world, I see politicians banging the drum and doing their best to support industries that I know will not be around in 10 years. So I see that as a bit of dereliction of duty, particularly, let's say, the automobile industry. You know, car companies that are still 100% building cars that chuck stuff out the back as they go along and that we're all choking on. That's literally going to be illegal to sell cars with exhaust pipes I think 2042 is the UK, but long before that it won't happen. And there won't be an industry for it. So I see politicians banging the drum for industries which they've actually said are going to be illegal 10 years from now. That's such a dereliction of duty, isn't it? Or let's say, like, Trump and his coal industry support, you know, he's saying, we're going to open all these coal mines again, it's going to be fantastic, we're going to make America great again. But even with his support, they're not going to exist because there's no demand for it. And you know, the renewable industry is taking off big time. It's just a dereliction of duty, isn't it?
Makes you wonder about all the countries that are dependent on their oil sales.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen to them?
Yeah, totally. You
know, they're very rich at the moment, but where's their money going to come from once the oil isn't used anymore or it runs out?
Yeah. You know? But it's easier to say something to people like Trump has with the coal guys, that, yeah, I'm your guy for clean coal. This is... and people will vote for that.
How do you do clean coal? Do you have to have filters on
there? Capturing it as it goes out and sticking it back in the ground, that kind of thing. It's not really economically viable. But it's easy to kind of, like with doctors saying, oh, okay, you've got this horrendous illness, but you might live a while, you know, where underneath they're thinking, but this guy's only got 6 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so be prepared for...
Yeah, I think the prognostic work and predicting when or if people are going to die is quite tough, because you do get cases where someone's been told you've probably got 6 months and 10 years later they're still sat there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is...
You do get those little freak events, don't you, where, like, someone who's on a life support system, all the doctors are saying, we need to switch it off, and then people fight for it, and 10 years later they wake up.
There's the guy that's in the Secret movie book who's crashed a plane, and his wife's being told that he'll never walk again, and he's determined to walk, and he does actually walk out of the hospital, or he sort of shuffles out of the hospital. Yeah. He was back up on his leg because he wasn't going to...
Not through magic, though, through hard work.
Yeah. Determination.
Yeah. That's the secret.
Yeah.
Have you got resource or anything else you want to say?
Well, no, just that it's like when you've got to give bad news, don't faff about, you know, be sensitive, be empathic, but don't play, let's pretend. People can deal with information, just like the guys on death row, much better if they know where they stand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and very often the person that's delivering the news, if it's a manager or a doctor or whoever, can feel very difficult about telling people exact, precise stuff. But it makes such a difference to the person if they do get the exact information. Yeah, it may be hard for that person to process, but that doesn't mean say they shouldn't be processing it.
Yeah, cool. Mine was similar. Mine's the 10 Commandments for Delivering Bad News on Forbes.com. Examples such as thou shalt always justify, because it's all about clarity and preparing yourself beforehand.
So mine is NAP.
Oh yeah.
CNBC, breaking business news.
Breaking business news, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, how do you actually break news in a business? And like I say, it's ensuring the survival of the rest of the workforce, not just the people that get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, all right. I'll link all that stuff in the show notes, so take a look at livingthepresent.co.uk. for all that, and drop us a line if there's anything you would like us to talk about in an upcoming show. Right, Sean?
I'm cool.
Back next week?
Yep. Take care.
Take it easy.
See ya.
See you, man. Ciao.
Bye.